quality of marking, the function of marking or perceiving, not seem to be clear, but there seems to be some confusion about the function of memory. And I have some doubt about this aspect of sanya. Does sanya also have the function of memory?
What is this? It's a glass of water. Who knows that it's sanya performs that function of knowing the shape and form of the object which is seen? Can we say that that's the memory, or can we just say that sanya which knows, which marks, or which remembers?
When the vital memory or remember, we tend to think that there is some recollection from the past. I can understand the function of just perceiving in the present, but to know that this is a cup or glass, it seems as though I must recall some experience from the past.
As soon as it sees, or as soon as citta sees, sanya knows, or remembers, or marks. If there is no marking, there is no remembering. One does not know what that object is if there is no sanya.
By marking, do you mean like discrimination?
Marking the characteristic which appears, marking the shape or the form. Like sound, there are many levels of different sounds, high and low, different degrees. And sanya marks the difference with memory or remembrance, whatever one thinks. But it knows or it marks.
We don't seem to be the same to me, marking and remembering.
At moment of marking, is there no remembering at all? Or marking with remembrance or memory?
Sometimes I remember in the sutta it's mentioned somewhere about description of sati, mindfulness, as being able to remember what one has done long ago, being able to recall. And it seems as though sati also has an aspect of remembering.
It sounds like sanya, not sati, but if it's kusala citta which remembers, there must be sati which is aware as well. But since one recalls the past, the characteristic of sanya is prominent, but there must be sati when it's kusala citta. But when one talks about that moment, one thinks of memory, recollection, recalling the past more than the characteristic of sati.
So when we talk about the characteristic of sati, remembering, what exactly does that mean?
Sati is aware with kusala citta of what the object is.
But it's actually nothing to do with remembering.
It depends on what is prominent. When citta is kusala, for example, in dana, no one talks about sati, but there must be sati at that level of giving away. But we talk about dana instead of sati. Like when one talks about recalling the past, something like that, it can be with kusala citta or with akusala citta. But when it's sati, it has to be kusala. But it's not as prominent as sanya.
in the habit, like in the Abhidharma of another school, that Sanya had the character, Sanya or maybe had the function of perceiving or marking, that Sati did not have the or mindfulness did not have the function which we give it. It had the function of remembering. And it was not bound to, it wasn't arising just with wholesome consciousness, but also with unwholesome.
Like when there is a moment of dana, is it the remembering of dana or it's the awareness of dana?
This is different from the function of memory. Mindfulness is mindful to be genius, or remembers to be genius in that sense.
Right.
But here, rather than remembering to be genius, talking about the function of just remembering, rather than being mindful of the wholesome, the function to remember.
But it has the function of awareness even it remembers. Remembers of being aware of dying, of keeping.
I still find it a little bit difficult to understand how to see how marking and remembering goes together for the
I think that it's the matter of the words only, but when they're seeing and one knows what the object is, it's Sanya which knows. That's why there is question of the about the characteristic of Sanya and Vinyana. What is the characteristic of Vinyana and what is the characteristic of knowing as Vinyana and the knowing as Sanya. When there is seeing, there is Sanya which knows what is seen. But the citta cannot have such Sanya. It just sees. So what is that characteristic which knows? That it's a glass of water, or it's a table, it's a chair. It's Sanya which knows that, but citta knows or experiences the object.
Why would it be that we find where sati is not defined about in a way that one can remember what one did long ago?
Remember in the sense that it's kusala, it doesn't forget to be wholesome or kusala, to give or to observe precepts, abstaining from ill deeds, or to be calm or to develop right understanding of reality which appears.
I remember that in this particular passage there is no mention of kusala.
But in reality, sati must be kusala. Sati cannot be a kusala at all. So it's not any moment of remembering, but it's moment of not being forgetful to be kusala. Not forget to give, not forget to be calm, not forget to study reality which appears. So if one is stuck on the word remembering, one thinks that it's not the characteristic of sati, because one knows that it should be sanya, which remembers.
In a certain passage, it mentioned, it didn't mention anything to do with wholesomeness, but just that one can remember what one did.
That's why one has to read Suttanta with the understanding of Abhidhamma. One cannot completely forget about Abhidhamma while one reads Suttanta?
We were talking about the characteristic of perception and the function of perceiving the mountain seemed to present no difficulty. But the other function of remembering seemed to present some difficulty. And I did some reading, some research, and it seemed to be not so clear.
I'm seeing the leaves shaking. Is it remembering or is it perceiving? I don't mind whether it's remembering or perceiving, because sanya remembers or perceives that the leaf is shaking.
And the quality which remembers what we did yesterday at a particular time,
sanya arises each moment. When there is thinking about anything, it's sanya which remembers that object.
Khandas. Six universal mental factors?
Yes.
That's one of perception.
Yes.
There's the aspect of remembering. In the literature I've read it, they talked about how one to keep a sequence of like conversation or movement, but there is also this function of sanya, so that there was a sequence when one was speaking or thinking, like the remember, it was not just random, there was a sequence. And it seemed to present a specific aspect of the secret aspect of remembering. But it didn't seem to be so clear. But I found it very interesting to find that in another school, Abhidhamma school, sati was given the quality of remembering, not for Krishna or Abhisana. And then it made me remember back to the sutra passage where sati was defined as being able to remember what one did in the past, but not what sutra defined, but just to recall or recollect.
When it's akusala, which recalls the past, can it be sati, which remembers? Whenever there is panya, there is sati. Whenever citta is kusala, there is sati.
If we can recall what we did yesterday, is this sati?
It depends on citta, whether it's kusala or akusala. There is thinking, but thinking can be kusala or akusala. So it depends on kusala or akusala, whether there is sati or not.
I understand the definition of mindfulness which we normally have in the sense of mindful or remembering to be wholesome, whether it's genius or something like this. But when it comes to remembering or recalling something we did in the past,
one has to fit that meaning with kusala as well. One shouldn't forget that it has to be kusala.
So when there seems to be good memory or recollecting of what we have done in the past, can we say that this is another aspect of sati?
What I can say is that if citta is a kusala, it's not sati. But when citta is kusala, it is sati.
There can be a lot of firm recollecting of what happened yesterday with a lot of attachment or with a lot of ignorance that isn't wholesome at all. And then, because we understand from the Abhidhamma that sati can only arise with kusala citta, we know it can't possibly arise at that moment when there's the recollection of a lot of attachment to that. Thinking of the past or something.
What is the cause of this?
There's still the sanya, the memory or marking, because it arises with every citta itself. And this is pointed out, it's a universal mental factor that arises at each moment, and it can be wholesome or unwholesome depending on the citta at that moment. But what Kunti Chin was just saying is sati, awareness, can only arise with wholesome citta. So if there's recollecting with a bristle of citta, there's sanya, marking at each moment, but there's certainly no sati at those moments.
It's true, if sanya recollected with a bristle of citta, then it seems sati, the recollection aspect of sati and the bristle of citta seems redundant. The sanya is present there also, and that also reflects in that case sati vibhava recollecting
indicating. Well, what Kunti Chin is saying that when we talk about sati remembering, it's remembering in the sense that it remembers at that moment to abstain from unwholesomeness. It remembers to be wholesome at the moment of generosity, or at the moment of observing the sila, or at the moment of right understanding.
So the remembrance of sati is linked to that aspect.
Yes, it's not marking or remembering in the sense that sanya marks or remembering.
This glass is a glass.
Right. It's nothing to do with that.
The question should be whether can sati be akusala? Sati, awareness of mindfulness, be kusala, akusala? Can it be akusala?
According to you, so you know, I think it has to be akusala.
Mm-hmm. It has to be sopana, it can be vipaka, akiriya, akusala, but it cannot be akusala.
It's interesting that you have another school before and another school.
Does it say that sati can be a kusala?
Yes. So it's given a function, a specific function of the liver or the liver. So it can arise with kusala or a kusala.
So it's not the same as the sati which is referred to in the Pitaka as we understand it.
It's not the same as we understand it according to a tradition. But we can find the sutra where the definition of sati and sutra is given as being able to recollect what one really requires. Thank you so much.
Then how many akusala jitas, akusala jetasikas are there?
It's just arising from some uncertainty about the aspect of remembering or recollecting. And there seems to be some confusion between perception, which is sanya, sometimes defined as memory, and sati. And by doing research, it seemed to me that it was not quite clear. If one accepts our tradition, then there is no need for any argument.
Because if one looks at the Abhidharma, it's very clear that it can only be a kusala.
I think that it's more like gathāvaka. It depends on the question and the answer. For example, when we talk about the recollection of Buddha, the recollection of Dhamma, the recollection of Sangha, we can say whether it's sati or not sati, which recollects. It's sati. But when we talk about other recollection of one's past deeds, akusala, or things like that, can we say that it has to be, it is sati which recollects? Sometimes the answer can be yes, and sometimes the same question is no. Even the word is recollection.
Yes,
depending on the reality of that moment. We can use the term recollection because it recalls, but when it's recollection of the Buddha's virtues or the Dhamma, the Sangha, it is sati which recollects. But it's the recollection of other object, which is not Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, or death, or the object of kusala, of calmness, one cannot say that it's sati. So the answer can be sometimes yes and sometimes no, according to reality.
So if we were defining sutta, where sati was defined as being able to recall what one had done in the past, then we must...
It has to be the kusala citta which we call so that it can be sati, otherwise it cannot be sati. That's why when one reads sutta, one has to think of Abhidhamma as well. Or when one reads Abhidhamma, one has to think of the sutta as well. Not the same. Sanya marks or perceives the object. And sati is aware or mindful. So sati is healthy, skillful.
If there's experience in this particular book, and the word comes to the mind because of conditions, past conditions, but maybe the Thai word doesn't come to the mind because conditions aren't right for it to come to the mind. And so we would say, oh, I've forgotten what this is called in Thai. That's where I think sometimes we have the problem with this idea of remembering. We associate the word remembering with what was conditioned in the past. And so we might not say namsi. We'll think, oh, I can't remember. But that's not the characteristics of sanya. That type of remembering is not the characteristic of sanya. Because that's due to conditions. The conditions weren't right for that to arise, that word to arise in the mind.
You say that sanya cannot forget anything because it remembers and it marks, so it cannot forget. But sanya arises with each citta. What is citta? Is it citta which forget? Okay. There are two different types of realities, nama and rupa. Rupa cannot experience anything. Nama can. At moment of thinking that one forgets, what reality is it which forgets? The rupa or the nama? Nama, the rupa cannot forget.
Isn't the reason there is no so-called memory of this?
But sanya marks whenever it arises with any object, with any citta, it perceives the object by marking that moment of being forgetful.
Why doesn't the thought arise nansu?
Because sanya marks that object which is not nansu. There must be citta arising from moment to moment. At that moment, citta does not experience nansu, so sanya does not perceive or mark nansu. It marks the object which citta experiences.
Why is it that it doesn't mark?
By conditions. Why does it mark? Why doesn't it mark?
By conditions. So a problem with the so-called memory we talk about often is really lack of conditions.
Memory is conditioned.
Well, in what we often use, when I say I don't remember the name of this book, it's only really lack of conditions.
There are conditions which condition such moment of being forgetful.
In that example, when there's getting the name, can one talk about the aspect of Sanya remembering it all, or can one just say it still marks, but...
We shouldn't use just one word for the characteristic of reality. For the citta, Buddha used many words to represent that reality. Sometimes mano and sometimes vijnana, not just citta. So there must be many words that we could use in order to represent that characteristic of sanya. Sometimes he used the word which represent its function, and sometimes its characteristic.
When we cannot remember the name or remember something, we understand that there is still sanya. But what is the quality which can remember something?
It's still sanya. Because at moment of forgetting, is there no citta at all, or is there citta at that moment?
I can understand here that sanya is arising in mind and perceiving.
The object which citta experiences.
But it seems to me that there might be another unifier or something which can be finished, which conditions the movement or the feeling.
At moment of forgetting, there is citta which doesn't remember the object that one wants to remember. But it doesn't mean that there is no citta. So the sanya with that citta marks that object which citta at that moment experiences.
And when one can recollect, when we can recollect or remember an object, we see that citta experiences that object and sanya marks or perceives that object. But is there also another factor which recollects?
The same characteristic, the characteristic of sanya.
It seems to me there's a difference between the function of sanya. When one forgets, but sanya still marks or perceives the object. And when one can remember, there seems to be a firmness of our recollection. When sanya again marks or perceives, but it seems to me that there's another factor which can recollect. Doesn't it do?
I see that the difference is only the object, not the sanya.
What can one say that in one the conditions to think about that particular object or that particular Thai word and another time no conditions to think about it? Is that just...
When one forgets, one knows that one forgets. Right? And it's sanya which knows that characteristic. When citta cannot remember, when citta forgets, that is one moment. When citta remembers, we simply say citta remembers. It's because sanya at that moment remembers the object that citta experiences. And one knows that one does not forget at that moment. So it's sanya in both situations.
I can understand that when one forgets, we can say that citta forgets, but sanya marks and perceives.
Marks the object that citta forgets.
When one remembers, that one can say citta remembers and sanya marks and perceives the object
which citta
remembers.
So the
what is the other function? What is the other function which
only objects are different. The object of moment when citta forgets and the object when citta remembers.
I don't think that we can just put it down to conditions because they might be another factor which is the condition.
Maybe it's also difficult because they're used to thinking in terms of right and wrong memory, like when we remember when we don't remember conventionally, which is quite different from right and wrong sanya, which is wholesome and unwholesome. So for example, at the moment of not remembering the Thai word, it can still be a wholesome citta, but conventionally we think of that as being bad memory or something like
that. Arise each moment. It arises only when one remembers.
It's there all the time though,
it arises each moment. Sanya marks the object which citta experiences, or perceives the object which citta experiences.
It's there each moment, but we don't necessarily know that aware of its presence.
Mm-hmm. One doesn't know that there is sanya which is marking the movement of the fan, but at moment of seeing, there's the idea of the fan is moving. It's a fan that is sanya, which marks or perceives the object which citta experiences.
Do these other mental factors occur sequentially in the order that they're given, like first contact, feeling and then perception, intention, concentration, sight, flight and attention? Do they occur one after the other?
Simultaneously. Simultaneously, together.
Simultaneously. But would one take, one would be of greater strength than others? I can't understand how they would, like feeling, could occur simultaneously with contact and perception. It seems to me that contact would have to come before feeling, and no. Perception would have to come before feeling. An object would have to be marked or before feeling would arise from it?
Whenever there is contact, and contact hasn't fallen away yet, as soon as it contacts, it conditions feeling, or feeling arises together with contact, because contact arises and falls away instantly. It feels the object that contacts. It cannot feel the object that contact has fallen away or contact hasn't contacted yet. But feeling can feel the object that contacts. And sanya cannot perceive the object that contact hasn't contacted yet.
What is psychic life of these?
Life faculty is another, it's sometimes called life faculty. Each moment of life there has to be the life faculty for life to continue at each moment.
Do you have desire or something?
Can you say something more?
There must be lifespan for each moment, for any reality. For a human being, we think that lifespan can be 100 years or 70 years, things like that. But for a moment, there must be lifespan as well. And when it's reality which experiences an object, like vijnana, the faculty of experiencing, it has no characteristic of being life faculty. And passa, contact, has the function of contacting. It cannot feel. But there is another cetasika which arises together with the other six cetasikas, and that cetasika is life faculty, which is life of that moment, of nama, all nama, stays for a time, for a moment.
Shivitindriya.
Nama Shivitindriya. There are two kinds of life faculty, nama indriya and rupa indriya. Each reality has its lifespan or life faculty, and life faculty is a reality.
What's it to do with the duration at the moment?
Mm-hmm. By that faculty.
Can one talk about accumulating sanya for a particular object?
For example,
marking glass at this moment. Can one talk about accumulating the marking of particular?
Each moment is accumulated by its nature. One doesn't have to develop the accumulation.
So even though it's accumulated to mark it, mark a particular object, sometimes conditions to forget it, not to mark it. Is that all one can say?
One says that one forgets, but there are many moments of citta arising and falling away, and each citta sanya marks the object that citta experiences. But one thinks that sanya has to remember for sure. Sanya cannot forget. So one thinks that it is not sanya when one forgets. But whenever citta arises, sanya arises. It performs the function of marking whatever object citta experiences.
So one can say that it's being accumulated to mark different objects all the time, so impossible really to know exactly what is marking, what isn't.
It depends on citta at that moment, what object it experiences, and sanya just perceives that object. Forgetting about marking, if that characteristic is not prominent, forget the characteristic of being able to remember when that characteristic is not prominent. Just perceiving.
In the case of the book and forgetting the Thai name, it's a different time you perceive the book. You remember what the book is, it's a book. And if you forgot the English name, you forgot all names for it, it would be a different time of perception for the name. So
Sanya perceives that name.
It's a different time you perceive
English
the
object. In Thai, according to citta. Of that moment.
And when they say that it's accumulated but not formed up because it's not sankara kanda, I find it very hard to know what the difference is between formed up and accumulated.
Sankara kanda formed at the moment of kusala or the moment of akusala. Lobha formed at loka mulatika. Alobha formed at kusala tika.
Still sanya is kusala or akusala, so does it not have any part in forming up the kusala?
It just perceived or
it that we, but we can still talk about it accumulating more akusala sanya.
Because citta and sankara kandas are akusala.
Not because the sanya is akusala.
Sanya perceived on the object.
When we talk about karma, it's often sort of rather loosely used. According to Abhidharma, where or which parts of mind are actually responsible for accumulating karma? Like, what's the process?
The kusala and akusala citta.
And what about the part of these 52 mental factors? I think I read it.
The akusala mental factors or the sopana mental factors? For example, seeing is vipaka, is the resultant. It's the result of karma. So it does not produce any result because seeing itself is the result of karma. When it experiences pleasant object, it's the result of kusala karma. When it sees unpleasant thing, it's the result of akusala karma. So the seeing itself is not the karma. It cannot be the conditions which can produce a kusala vipaka or kusala vipaka.
Which conditions, which mental factors accumulate these kusala?
Akusala jetasikas and kusala jetasikas. Jetasikas are mental factors.
So in the process of, say, just sitting here, mm-hmm. how would I be accumulating karma? Because not all of the moments that take place are purely experiential through the senses, like the vanities. I must be accumulating some karma. What is it, all sort of kusala karma, like just listening to Dhamma? Or I still don't really understand what, in terms of mental factors or mind, how karma is accumulated.
The four chati of jittas. Some jittas are akusala, and some jittas are kusala, and some jittas are vipaka, which is the result of kusala or akusala, and some jittas are kiriya, inoperative. So only kusala citta and akusala citta can condition result of vipaka.
Could you give me an example of this, of just in practical everyday reality?
When one has attachment to a certain object and one sees that one has stronger and stronger attachment to that object, one knows that attachment is accumulated. It hasn't been eradicated. That's why there is attachment appearing. We use the word citta, the faculty of experiencing objects. And there is citta arising from moment to moment, all the time. When one is gone, it is the rebirth consciousness, citta, which is born. With many jetasikas conditioned by previous karma. Is that citta now?
Yes.
What does citta do?
It experiences an object.
Right. Mm-hmm. Is citta kusala or akusala?
Depends on what's coming.
Right. When akusala citta arises, and even it has fallen away, the unwholesomeness which conditioned the next citta is there in the next citta as well. That's the way it's accumulated. The composition of the milk, is it the same as the composition of sour milk when that milk becomes sour? Changing by conditioning from moment to moment. This moment of loha has more accumulation of loha than many days ago. because there is lobha or attachment all the time, from eyes to ears to nose to tongue to body to mind. So there must be more lobha all the time, a little more, a little more.
Karma
must be the strong kusala which reaches the degree of committing ill deeds, ill speech, or
through body, or
through body. When there is attachment or just lacking something, but there is no stealing yet, that is not karma. It's only akusala citta, unhealthy citta. But when there is stealing or killing, it's karma. It reaches the degree that it conditions the action through body or speech or mind.
Wouldn't just the mental thought to steal something condition the mind in a certain way, and so become producing? Or
it depends on whether it reaches the degree of strong, unhealthy citta that can produce karma, produce vipaka. When it's just a kusala citta at low level, it does not reach the degree of karma. It is the accumulation only. Has no potency to condition the vipaka yet, but it's being accumulated from moment to moment.
Is there any way of knowing when it's the degree of karma?
It's so.
Is it possible to attain
akusala karma?
So one can only know because one's read that it's not.
This is one other thing in here. What does prompted mean? You've got prompted and unprompted in here in this system. The thing is,
when it arises without anything to prompt it.
Perform some deed just without it being prompted, without maybe thinking about it, or without there being anything to prompt it, or without anyone saying anything or something like that, then it's unprompted.
That it like the intention was without strong intention.
One has to encourage oneself to read Dhamma book or to come to the temple that is prompted.
I think it's easier to understand that prompted is more than have to think about whether or not someone encourages you to go to the temple to give for that means prompted.
Elizabeth, did you want to say anything more about what we were discussing earlier about feeling that because there isn't enough awareness or understanding that you think it's necessary to do something special or
We were discussing, the last time I see we were talking about selecting objects for awareness, and I thought that in the beginning, as our minds are so scattered, my mind is so scattered, that it's helpful to select one object and to be aware of it, and therefore awareness increases in this way. And this is maybe why things like mindfulness of breathing are taught, to give one an object to concentrate on his mind, whereby one can go deeply in his words, the realities.
Why does one want to develop awareness?
To see the way things really are.
As another, not as self. So when will one see that sati is anatta? If one selects an object for sati?
I'm talking about as a beginning practice. I mean, probably is wrong conditioning, but it's a start. To me, you have to make a start. I mean, it's just helpful. You have to use an aid or a prop.
If that is not the right start, one has to start again. To begin to understand that sati is anatta as well. And when will one start to understand that sati itself is anatta? That it can arise, it can be aware of any object before one thinks of inducing it to such or such object. It has a reason, it's aware, because its function is to aware, to be aware.
Why did the Buddha teach anapanasati?
Not just anapanasati, not only anapanasati. Mahasatipatthana doesn't mean that there is only one object.
But did he teach it as a selective object?
No, not at all. By that way, one cannot begin to see that sati is anatta, all dharmas are anatta. The purpose of developing satipatthana is to understand the anattaness of all realities.
But you could start by using anatta sati, couldn't you, and see?
Sati is aware by conditions, not one can control it to be aware of a certain object. Can one control sati? Can sati be controlled?
No.
So sati can be aware of any object. Not necessary to choose any object for sati to be aware. Otherwise, there is no right understanding of the anatta-ness of all realities. One does not develop right understanding that one knows that it's right. Because before the development of satipatthana, one learns that all realities are anatta. So the development of satipatthana should lead to the more precise understanding of the anattaness of all realities which appear now. If one selects object for concentration or sati, as one says, or one thinks, it cannot lead one to help one to understand that all realities are anatta.
I think it could, because as you somehow develop the sati through one object, then you would naturally imagine, be aware as everything as it comes in the sense field.
If one controls sati, can one see that sati is anatta?
No.
So
but this controlling element, I should imagine, would fall away after some time.
That moment of controlling is useless because it doesn't bring about right understanding that all realities are anatta. One sees the advantage, so one takes it as right practice when it's not. So one has some wrong practice while one selects object for sati. So it cannot be samma sati because it cannot arise by conditions. first one understand that the moment of seeing is just a reality, not self, which sees. If there is no right understanding of seeing, what should one do? Develop right understanding of seeing. Why does one think of breathing?
How does one develop right understanding of seeing if there is no right understanding of seeing? And how does one develop it?
Does one know that seeing is real? It's a reality. It's conditioned. It does not stay.
At this point in time, I don't know.
But seeing is real, isn't it? Seeing is real.
It's
real.
If one perceives it as real,
at this moment,
experiences.
At this moment of seeing, it's real. Right? It's conditioned, so it's not self. When it's not self, it's a reality, which sees. So seeing is not visual object, because the visual object cannot see anything. It can be seen by seeing a reality that experiences it. So seeing is not a self, it's just a moment of experiencing visual object. So when it's right understanding, it understands seeing as a reality which experiences visual object only. Whenever there is seeing without awareness, there is no right understanding of seeing, because there is I see, or the idea of I see all the time. It's I who sees. But in reality, it's just a moment of experiencing visual object. So there should be the development of awareness in order to understand the moment of seeing as a moment of experiencing visual object. And sati can arise, it can be aware when there's seeing, when there's hearing, when there's touching, when there's thinking. Because sati is anatta. One cannot control sati. One cannot have sati at will. But right understanding can see that sati is anatta. It is conditioned when it arises.
In right understanding, you develop?
Certainly. With awareness, it's more precise. It's not only theoretical knowledge. Because we can talk a lot about seeing without being aware of seeing. So it's another level of developing right understanding. When awareness is aware of seeing, when it's real, it can be proved, it can be directly understood.